Now Say Now. You're tuned into the Wake Up and Win podcast, and I am your host, Devon Pouncey. We are here at the Momentum Studios, myself, Spencer Shea, Zeb behind the controls, and it's episode 250, baby.
Yeah. I feel like $250.
$250. We gotta get the price up then. Time for us to get the price up. Episode 250, and we only fit like $250. That means the price must go up.
2 million. There you go. How about that?
At least give me $250,000.
I was actually gonna say I really do feel great.
No, that's good.
I'm glad to hear.
I'm glad to hear.
It's I haven't a great talked day. To you in a couple of days.
For sure, it's a great day. Weather's nice. You know, you've been outside. I've been gigging a lot. These past couple weeks, it's been like 10 gigs probably in the last 2 weeks. So gigs are going crazy. More gigs to come this weekend. But I want to stick to 250 right now.
Episode 250.
You've been around since day one.
Right.
What's your thoughts?
Yeah, man, that's funny. I love that. I love thinking about that, bro, because, you know, obviously the first episode, I wasn't on, but I was there, you know?
Yeah.
Sitting right there. And, I mean, I knew that we were going to continue to do it.
For sure.
But the consistency of just being able to knock out 250 in a row, that's the first thing Zeb said when we walked in the studio.
For
it was
sure.
Like 250, bro.
It's big.
I'm like, that is tight.
That's tight.
That's tight. We kept it together, man. It's been like 7 years of doing this, and I'm in the groove. I feel like I'm finally in the groove now. I'm ready for about 250 to 3,000 more.
I'm ready to get rocking too.
I'm with it.
It's interesting you say that because, you know, obviously coming in, I had to reflect on episode 250. What does it mean? What doesn't it mean? You reflect on it all, the good, the bad, you know, the in between. And I had a kind of like this bittersweet feeling about being at episode 250. It's a sweet feeling that we made it here. But then also, there's this bitter feeling. I had this bitter feeling of, I feel like for as long as we've been doing this podcast, it hasn't been something that I've particularly prioritized. Mm-hmm. And I think what I would have envisioned coming into this, where we'd be at episode 250, we aren't. But it's not because we can't get there. I think, again, it's more so because I have, in a lot of ways, I've continued doing this podcast because there's a level of independence that's just in me. Growing up in the Bay Area, I mean, y'all know I DJ, I'm into the music stuff. Like, I grew up on a very independent scene, from music to tech to, you know what I mean? You name it. There's a lot of stuff that gets kind of created in the Bay Area, and everybody tends to be visionaries. It's kind of a culture more so than it is just like happenstance. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just kind of how we roll and operate. And with this podcast, you know, taking it back to before its inception, when I was first jumping into the media game, I was doing my internships, I was in college, and, you know, shout out Dr. Jules Boykoff. I took a class of his that piqued my interest tremendously. It was called Politics and Sports. And, you know, as I'm kind of starting to navigate the media industry, I do my first internship with John Canzano at radio. You know, I end up having one more semester of school. I graduate college. I'm jumping into my career. But as soon as I'm jumping into my career, like, I swung for the fences right away, and I ultimately wanted to have a radio show. I wasn't trying to come in. I took a beginner's job, but I wasn't trying to come in and be a beginner, and I very well let it be known, like, my goal here is to have a show. And this show, this podcast, was the exact thing that I was able to put together by way of the influence of the class that I took, Politics and Sports, and also by way of me kind of just working my way up and navigating through the radio industry. This podcast became like my tape. It became my demo. It became what I had to show for myself to even be deserving of a radio show, as I'm just jumping straight into the industry out of graduating college and hadn't put that many years in yet, especially in a top 25 market like Portland. And so we create this podcast, Wake Up and Win, an intersectional podcast. Obviously, the wake up part, you know, being more, speaking more to a social and political level. We obviously know about the term stand woke. Some of you probably hate that term. That's okay. Many of you have tried to change that, change the meaning of that term over time as well. That's okay. But before it was as popular as it became, where it ultimately became like a reckoning, the wake up part kind of derived from stand woke on a social and a political front. And then going and winning, that's obviously a huge part of competitive sports, which has been a part of what I've done all my life. And I do in a lot of ways, like I play to win, whether it's professionally, whether it's, you know what I mean, as an amateur playing basketball, playing competitive sports all my life, all the way through college. Like winning is something that I take pride in and have always done so, because I grew up in a competitive landscape, especially being an athlete. And so you kind of bring those worlds together. We dive in. Now, like I said, initially I had a bitter feeling, because if you fast forward from then to now, I would imagine this to look differently. Yeah. I would imagine it to be bigger. Mm-hmm. I would imagine it to have consistently have visuals. There's like so many things that I would have imagined from day one to right now that didn't happen, quite frankly. But then I got to think about ultimately what I've been able to make of myself throughout my career, with this podcast being the absolute foundation of that. And it's like, oh, everything that I wanted this podcast to mean and be about, that started off as just an idea, starting at episode one and back in those days, and you fast forward to episode 250, I embody that. I embody that brand. It's become my work. I do it professionally on a professional level. And that's what kind of made the bitterness go away a little bit, because, well, you know, I want the numbers like everybody else. I want the production like everybody else. Not knocking the production we got right now, but I'm saying beyond just like audio, wanting to do visuals, wanting to, you know, be more of a marketable podcast. And there's a lot of things that I still want to do and plan on doing. And there are things in the works, quite frankly, that's coming down the pike. Just stay tuned for it. But also at the same time, like, what I think is more important is that I was able to create this podcast as sort of a foundation of what I ultimately wanted to be, which is why I brung on certain guests onto this podcast that embodied that. And then I took the necessary steps to actually become that as my own person and individual brand. And I don't think that happens without this podcast, like, laying the foundation and giving me my own personal sense of direction in which way that I would have wanted to take my career. And a lot of great has come from that, and it has been very synonymous with the exact meaning, idea, and mission of what this podcast was all about from the gates. That makes me far more proud than anything.
Yeah, totally. And it's not going anywhere, too. Like, it's inextricably bound with the journey of where you're going, where for sure. I'm going. We've been doing it consistently. Like, there are two types of podcasts, in my opinion. There's ones that you can listen to, you can go, you get into, and then you can go back and listen, like, from the beginning and be like, oh, this works. And there's a bunch of different ways for that to work.
For sure.
And then there are other podcasts that, like, you don't really. Because
right.
They're all so topically based that if you miss a week, you know, the news cycle just buries whatever was relevant.
For sure.
But this podcast has done a little bit of both over the years and kind of weaves in and out. And like the intersectionality really of the podcast is what's allowed it to go. Like, if you're just listening to this podcast, like, go check out some of the interviews.
For sure.
For some of
it's been some great been some ones.
Great interviews that are just like, well,
top tier though.
Episode whatever. You
yeah.
know what I mean? So like, I feel like that's a cool element to the podcast that I enjoy. And just the consistency, man.
Yeah,
like,
the
consistency is to me the key, because it's bound to the journey.
For sure.
And everything takes time.
It's bound so much to the journey that I truly believe that it guides it. Because like I said, with all of the different things that I do that only my brain could have thought of to do in podcast format and then translate that over into like career format, it sounds wild, and it is a hard thing to explain, but this podcast, because I always understood the idea of this podcast and what I wanted it to mean, even if others caught on or didn't catch on, it has allowed me and kind of guided me through, because, you know, I get questions all the time like, well, what do you want to be? What do you actually want to be? Do you want to be a DJ? Do you want to be a sports commentator? Do you want to be a politician? Do you want to work in politics? Like, what is it that you actually want to do? And a part of that, the idea of this podcast was to be able to acknowledge all of those things, but not to be bound 100% to any of them. Because life is just a little bit more complex than that. Nothing is black and white. Nothing is straight up and down. There is a lot of gray area, even in a lot of the topics covered on this podcast, which is why we choose to cover them in the ways that we do. And so I have allowed that to translate over career-wise, where I'm actively DJing. I'm actively, you know, doing the journalism work, broadcast journalism, you know, print journalism, you name it. I'm also, you know, like I said, sports broadcasting, doing advocacy work in politics and doing political stuff as well. And it's like to be able to actively do all of those things and all of those things come to fruition in the way that it has been unique, to say the least, first and foremost. But if I had to credit my ability to be able to make all of that happen and start to make sense of it, this podcast was exactly what has kind of guided that and allowed it to be. And that's why I've never really strayed away from any of those industries. I just keep going in each of them. And, you know, I brand each of them out the way that I brand them out. I work in them and prioritize and shift them and move them around the way that I do. And I just make it happen by hook or crook, rather than tying myself to just having to be in the politics, or tying myself to just have to be in the sports, or tying myself to just have to be in the music. And it's allowed me to really have an outlook on things, because as things have progressed since the inception of this podcast, everything you see is intersectional now anyway.
Right.
So we were almost in a lot of cases ahead of the curve. And now, I mean,
we're able to navigate. Dude, yeah. It's funny because I use the podcast as like a beacon and as like an anchor, because that's why you and me got along in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's the type of people that we are. Excuse me. That's the type of people that we are.
For sure.
Where we had like five things going on all the time. So yeah. We've just, and it helps with me as being your friend, because I'm like, I know that he's got the same type of lifestyle and the same type of like activity as me.
Yeah.
So if it's a day or two or a whatever, a period of time where like I don't hit him back or he hits me and we don't answer each other's phone calls, we're not tripping on each other.
Yeah,
right.
No.
Because we know that like, yeah, a lot of shit going on. we'll circle back.
We'll circle back. For sure.
At the very worst, I'll see this dude on Wednesday
for
or
sure.
on Thursday, whatever it is.
For sure.
And so that has been just invaluable to my life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really became a thing. So ultimately, man, I'm very proud. I'm very proud to be here at 250. Like I said, but I'm also my own worst critic. And so getting to 250 has allowed me to reflect again on the good of the podcast, the bad of the podcast, again, where I would have envisioned us being at by episode 250 when I started it at episode one. And sometimes you need these moments to kind of to do that for you. I mean, as somebody, I went through a sabbatical, and that did the same for me when it came to, you know, my career and especially my work in particular at Street Roots, because that was where I took my sabbatical from. And now, and I haven't really talked about this much, but I'm transitioning. I'm still with the organization, but I'm transitioning positions there. Right. You know what I'm saying? Which I'm willing to talk about a little bit. You know, I've been at Street Roots, and I've been the vendor program director at Street Roots for 6 years, which has allowed me to obviously, you know, work closely with unhoused folks and also really be able to get into like advocacy and things of the like, which I think has been invaluable from an experience standpoint. Again, especially being able to make some of the political ties and connections that I've been able to make because of what that organization ultimately stands for, and me being in that position of leadership in that way, I had to stand on the front lines for, you know, some of our most vulnerable neighbors, the ones that are outside and on the streets. And so, like, I got to learn so much politically that I started to draw interest in because of sport. i.e. when I go back to that class that I talked about, that sports and politics, I didn't really care about politics that much until sports was able to give me like an interesting angle on politics that made me want to delve deeper into politics itself. Like, oh, if this is important to sport and what I do, I know it's massively important to everything else because I know how people try to downplay sport. I don't particularly agree with the ways that they try to downplay sport, but I know people try to downplay sport to being just a game, where for me, I have a much deeper and more intimate relationship with sport. But when it comes to the politics piece, being able to join Street Roots that had, you know, that still was within the journalism sphere, but being able to actually really be involved in just so many things from an advocacy front and trying to change and affect policy from the local level to the international level, I've been able to gain invaluable experience doing that work as a vendor program director. And then, of course, advocating for people that are unhoused to be able to have those firsthand connections with all of those people and to be able to, you know, really truly understand them because I was meeting them where they are doing that particular work. Invaluable experience. But I go on sabbatical, and when I initially started with Street Roots, I started as a freelance writer there. And then I just gotten laid off from radio, so I'm looking for other media gigs. I'm still doing this podcast independently, but I'm still looking for more work to go out there and do. I start writing intersectional articles about sports and politics in the Street Roots newspaper. A full-time position opens up there as a vendor coordinator because I was unemployed at the time because I had just gotten laid off of radio and was only doing freelance work. I take on this full-time position, obviously went from coordinator to manager to director within that program. Like I said, this last summer I go through the sabbatical phase, and then I had to think, like, starting to kind of get burned out of the vendor program director work a little bit, not because I didn't love it, but it's tough work, you know what I'm saying? And I do think people need to consider, hey, we just talked last week, when mentally you don't feel like you're in the space to compete or to perform, you might need to step away and make a change. My way of stepping away was, you know, I had worked there long enough to go on sabbatical. I took advantage of the sabbatical so I could step away and kind of hit the reset button. And as I really got to think of what brought me into Street Roots, ultimately, it was the media side of things. And now that, you know, we've added vendor enhancement programs and we've grown so much in a lot of ways organizationally under my tenure as the vendor program director, I'm now moving into a role that will be the community media director, where basically we will be partnering with folks to educate, train, and teach our vendors how to produce and create content in media. You know, with Street Roots in particular, we're very known for our newspaper and our print media, and shout out to our editorial department that has been putting on in that regard, award-winning editorial department, but we do so much within the organization now that still is attached to the mission, but it just doesn't particularly get publicized or promoted because we're not publishing much around that work outside of just going out and doing the work itself, which is great. Love that we're putting our heads down and doing it, but all of that doesn't hit maybe our news team in a way because there's like this firewall, editorial firewall, and they go out and do legitimate investigative journalism. And that's what our print newspaper has become. And so with this, I'm able to kind of work with and help, you know, our nonprofit organization to partner with, you know, programs like Open Signal, who teaches, you know, video and audio and editing production and all of these things. Zeb, I might be tapping on your shoulder if you're listening over there to come in and teach a class or two and teach some lessons on some things so folks can legitimately learn how to create and produce media for all of the other things that are going on within our organization outside of the newspaper that you all go out and buy from Street Roots vendors throughout the city. And then also our mission, the Street Roots mission is Street Roots creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper and other media that are catalysts for individual and social change. I think we've mastered the newspaper part. I want to be able to amplify the other media part of it to be able to not only, you know, get these folks that are in house the skills to go out and produce media and hopefully get opportunities beyond street roots, but also to still stay within our mission's work of actually amplifying the other media part, because our newspaper has been strong, as you well know, for a really long time now.
No, that's a good idea too. And I mean, and even just the way that people consume media, it's all through the phones and other, you know, like digital spheres.
Right.
So, and I think, like, it sucks to say, but you know, there's like a lot of content, particularly on YouTube, that is about like street life, homelessness. And a lot of the times it's really from an exploitative lens, from an outside spot of, you know, sort of judgment, or just putting it on display in a way that isn't coming from being like an advocate, an advocate side.
For sure.
So I can definitely see a need for that.
Exactly. For We do so much work in that regard because we do advocate. We do go out and we do
like
outreach.
Street Roots should have like a big famous TikTok account.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Where like people know this account.
Exactly.
And then it
because we actually do the work. Like I said, which is great. We put our head down and we do the work. And again, because we're a journalism organization, we know how to navigate. Hey, we're going to ask. We're not coming to exploit you. We might have cameras here. We're going to ask, are you willing to be on camera or not? We're going to get permission. We're going to take all the proper steps rather than just putting a phone or a camera in somebody's face to exploit them and to try to amplify the work that we're doing for them.
That's the value of Street Roots, is because it's such a big organization and the vendors are people that live on the street.
Yeah.
You have the ability to be like, how about instead of we film you, how
right.
about you take the camera
exactly,
and you film.
It's trauma informed.
Yeah, that's yeah, that's
it's
it.
Trauma informed. You know what for I'm sure. saying? Like, for like sure. these are their neighbors. These are their people.
Right.
These are their, you know. In a lot of cases, you know, I hear the term out there. This is their street family. Like, these are the people that they neighbor with, and we do that already. Also, we have our ambassador program that goes out and does outreach where they're the ones that are giving supplies. You know, Street Roots gets these supplies for our ambassadors of the organization to be able to go out and give supplies to people on the streets rather than me or you or some house folks, you know, just trying to feel like they're doing a good deed going out and doing it. I'm not saying that house folks shouldn't do that, but I do think it's a lot more trauma-informed to do it the way in which we kind of just alluded to here. So yeah, it's something that I'm happy about. Again, it'll be a change of pace for me, but also like I'm passionate about this media stuff and the experience that I've been able to gain over the years, obviously even right here with this podcast itself, and being able to try to see that translate for people that wouldn't likely get opportunities like these. Like, I'm excited to be able to try to, you know, give back in that way. And ultimately, I got my own big visions and dreams of what I would want to do, you know, when my brand becomes big enough where I want to create my own nonprofit. And I think this will be some, again,
Speaking, more invaluable.
For sure. Oh, yeah. This will be some more invaluable experience for when that day comes.
Right.
That I'll already, you know, be able to have and have gone through and almost like pilot it, if you will, because that's basically what it's going to be, is a pilot, because it's a brand new sector of our organization. Right. But, you know, it's a good time to do it because we're also transitioning and moving into our new building this summer. So as we're doing that and as we have more space to be able to allow for opportunities like this, I'm really excited for what it'll ultimately become. So that was a lot.
That's good. I'm glad that we got to hit. Yeah, that was wind shares.
That was wind shares, baby. I'm DJing this weekend, but just check out social media or something if you want to see where I'm spinning. But let's dig into some content, man. We got the NBA play-in is happening. The Western Conference, the Lakers last night, as we're recording this on a Wednesday, and the play-in games are getting started on the Eastern Conference. The Lakers last night defeat the Pelicans in what was a really good game.
It was a good game.
It was a good game. There were some players that didn't have good games that even if one of them did, Brandon Ingram or CJ McCollum, I think the Pelicans win that because Zion went to absolute work.
I think that they win that game if he stays in the whole game. That's
right.
How good he was playing.
Exactly.
Season high.
Exactly. Got hurt. through in that game. Like
a man possessed out there, bro. It was spectacular.
It was
spectacular.
It got me thinking, too,
because, you know, you don't get to see much of Zion, although to his credit, he's played the most games of his career this season. So good for him. But you don't get to see a lot of Zion in the volume that you would like because, you know, it's really easy to forget that, like, man, if this guy can put it together consistently and stay on the court, there's no one that can stop him.
He did that against Anthony Davis, dog.
And, I mean, everyone was getting bulldozed out
there.
You can't stand in front of him, man.
A bigger team in the Lakers and one of the best, the top three defensive big men in the league in Anthony Davis. And there was nothing they could do to stop him.
Zero chance to stop him. The only thing that could stop him was himself.
And that's exactly what happened.
But you know what? I mean, that's great. Zion, man. Come on, brothers. Keep on. Just trust the process, bro. It takes time, man. You know, a change happens like the turning of a great ship, very slowly and then all at once. So, I mean, just keep with it. But you got to talk about the other side, and you got to talk about LeBron, bro. He's just a genius, bro.
Yeah,
he's just a genius, man.
Mastermind of the game.
He seriously has mastered the game. It's so fun to watch. He's out there taking charges on Zion. He's out there, old man at the Y, with the step through, three pump fakes, just cooking guys and making passes that are just brilliant and, like, just the best basketball that you could play at that age for that. Like, he's just truly a master, man. I can't wait to see them play Denver because I got Denver in that series, obviously. Sure. But, man, that's going to be fucking fun to
watch. That's the series I wanted. I think especially with Zion being hurt now because, say CJ or Brandon Ingram showed up to the gym, you still very well could have gotten the Pelicans against the Nuggets in this first round
series. Which
would have been a great series, but without Zion, not so much. Yeah. So I am glad that things shook out the way that they shook out outside of Zion's injury because they still got to play another game. They got to beat the Kings.
That's right.
Defeated the Warriors, who look good as well, who look like they've been here before. When I say here, I'm talking postseason action. You know, they went through a tough seven-game series last year against the Warriors, were able to get some lick back by eliminating them from playoff contention by beating them in that first-round play-in game. And now they'll face off against the Pelicans to try to secure that eighth seed here on Friday. But again, kudos to Zion, kudos to Bron and the Lakers. But you got to give kudos to the Kings. And obviously, you know, I want to make the Kings the bigger story here, but the reality of it is they didn't win four championships together the way that the Golden State Warriors have. And now we got Klay in a contract year going into the offseason.
What did you hear that?
No.
Is it violins? Are they playing slow for Clay? What's happening, bro?
I'm saying that's the bigger story here. Congratulations, Kings. But that's about all you get out of me for winning the first round playing game. But the Warriors got some inner looking to do. They got to look at themselves in the mirror and decide, do we want to just ride this thing into the sunset as is and be proud of what we've accomplished? Or do we want to take advantage of the fact that Steph Curry is still an elite player, but the other two of that big three just are not? They're not. Klay Thompson is no longer an elite player today, in today's NBA. He's a good player. He's not elite. He was once elite. Draymond Green, still a good player. He's not elite anymore. He is no longer an elite player. Both Hall of Famers, no longer in their primes. Steph Curry, still hanging on to his prime. Do you ride this thing out with the crew because they've accomplished so much and they have overachieved by tons? Or do you want to say, we still got a once-in-a-generation player in Steph Curry that still is producing at a once-in-a-generation level and we might have to shake this thing up to bring another big name over here to let Steph Curry try to get a chance at winning a fifth championship? What matters more?
Well,
what we've done or what we're preparing to do?
Let's just operate under the assumption that we know what's going to happen because we don't.
We don't.
Since the very beginning, it's always been this, a whole thing goes the way Steph Curry wants it to go.
For sure.
So Steph is going to be the ultimate arbiter of this whole thing. But let's operate under the assumption that we do, because I'm just going to say it now. I mean, and I think this love affair that they've had with winning championships and having this dynastic sort of core, it aged like fruit and now it's rotten. So you have what has to happen is Klay Thompson and probably Draymond Green have got to go. Draymond doesn't have to be a great player in order for them to get back into relevancy. Steph just needs another great player next to him. Draymond can still be Draymond. To have that go down, how poetic and how disgusting is the world if it goes down that Klay Thompson goes 0-for, the last taste we see of him on a basketball court for the season, and it ends up Draymond Green with all the turmoil that he's caused for that organization and for Steph Curry particularly. Now, mind you, it came with four rings and ultimate fame and being a legend till after you die.
For sure.
But Klay having to go, he's damaged goods now, so I don't know where or when or how he's going to get there, but he's got to go. Someone has to get go.
Somebody will pay Klay Thompson.
For sure, but that's
because
fine.
Because he's a free agent.
But my
trade is a different conversation.
My question for the Warriors, and I'm asking you as a Warriors fan, for real. Mm-hmm. Let's take away the fact that you're a Rip citizen for a second.
I'm a Rip citizen,
man. Put that over there for a second.
Got you. I grew up in the Bay.
Look down that line.
Shout out GP2.
Look down that line. Two-parter. Shout out GP2. Two-parter. Who's the guy? And with the other guys that you have, is there something there for the Warriors to do something this offseason? Who's the guy to come? Because someone's got to go. Who's coming? And then with the guys you have, the Jackson Hayes, the Pajemskis of the world, is that?
The Kamingas,
sure. Duly noted. See, now those are guys that you may have to package up because of the contracts. Klay's a free agent. But Draymond, I guarantee that if they're exploring trade options and Draymond's name pops up, it's more than interesting to those folks over there to be like, well, let's just bounce him now too.
Here's what I think. I think you give Klay a number and you say, Klay,
it's going to be the veteran minimum if it's based on performance.
Klay Thompson can still go make $20 million a year. He's still an elite three-point shooter in the league. He's no longer an elite player. Klay used to be an elite player. He was a two-way guy. He was more mobile. All the things. Like, Klay was a maxed contract dude. Like, he's not dropping off to veteran minimum by no way, shape, or form.
No, I was just being now hyperbolic.
Now, 20 to 25 million? Half of that? Because the guys that are – the max guys are making 50 million a year. I think Klay Thompson still believes he's at least half of that. I do, especially because he still can shoot. Yes, he shot poorly last night, but he's still 0 for 10. Yeah, but I mean, I won't base his upcoming contract on one game. He still made a lot more threes than most players in the NBA make in a season.
And will make in a season.
You know what I'm saying? And beyond, but even this season included. So I think the thing with Klay is, he has to decide what's more important to him right now today, money, which you already have, or another championship, which you already have. So what's more valuable to you today? Do you want to go make more money and be richer because you got plans beyond the game of basketball and you know this thing doesn't last forever? If that's the case, go get your $20 to $25 million a year for the next 3 years. Or if winning championships and you still got that burning feeling inside that you want to go win another championship, cut that in half so that the team still has more room to negotiate. They still have more of a cap to work with. Like, the decision, I don't think, is going to be on Steph Curry. I think you heard in the post game conference yesterday, everybody says they want Klay to still stick around publicly. Steph said it. Kerr said it. They all want Klay to stick around publicly.
What else he say, though? No, we want him to leave now because we know that we can win better.
For sure.
With him.
But,
you're not going to say that, even
for
if
sure.
it's true, which it is.
Well, the part that you're not going to say is, under these conditions. You can say the first part, which is we want Clay around. I can't imagine playing without Clay. It's all I've ever known. Like, that's my guy. I'm never going to turn on him to y'all. But the conversation that y'all will never hear on the back end is under these conditions.
Right. This and is I the think maximum we're allowed to quote-unquote deal with you with.
Deal with you with if we want to still have a chance to bring a big name in and bring guys in to ultimately contend.
Oh, it's pay cut season.
It's pay cut season if he stays in Golden State.
Yeah.
He can go to Charlotte somewhere and he can go over there and make $20 million a year. Go get $25 million a year.
Golden State, go get Brandon Miller.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he can go do that. I mean, well, again, it's free agency. I mean, so it's like you still would have to package up other shit and you would have to see who's available in free agency.
Who's the guy?
I mean, not available, but the guy that you would empty the house for would be somebody like a Giannis. It would have to be somebody like
Giannis.
But he
just signed an extension. So he's
making so you would have to trade. You would have to, Kuminga, got to go. Draymond, got to go. Everybody.
Clay, we can't re-sign you, bro. Sorry, dog.
Got to go. Right now, got to go. Everybody, you got to empty the house for him.
Okay.
Steph's the only guy that's untouchable in that standpoint.
Steph and Giannis,
I think, would be crazy. Now, some might disagree with that because you look at the next best shooter. Well, you look at Giannis and Dame. Dame's the next best shooter after Steph in the league. But it's like not only different players, Dame and Giannis ain't doing as bad as y'all act like they are. Mm. They just been through a bunch of shit. Mm. It's still a 3 seed. Giannis, unfortunately, is hurt going into the postseason, but, like, this is still a 50-win team that's a 3 seed in the Eastern Conference that have dealt with coaching changes, that have dealt with Dame's guy, Terry Stotts, leaving earlier in the year. Like, this team has dealt with – I mean, they've had 2 head coaches this season. Like, that's a lot to still be able to win through that. We don't know that Giannis and Dame don't work. We just – it's been a lot of BS that they've had to endure, and they're still winning basketball games at a high clip. They've been the number 2 seed most of the season, ended up dropping to number 3 by a half game or so, whatever. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, I don't still think Dame and Giannis don't work. I just don't know if Giannis will be healthy enough to perform in the postseason this year. We haven't gotten to see it yet.
Who does Milwaukee play in? They're playing Indiana.
Halliburton.
That's going to be I wanted to say this because last week.
Who's had their number this season, by the way?
I was just about to say this because we talked last week about the who's dangerous and we never mentioned Indiana. And if they would have been mentioned, I would say they are dangerous. In fact, out of all the quote unquote upsets that you could see in this first round, that's the one I got my eye on.
Without Giannis.
And I thought that with Giannis, to be honest.
Yeah, it wasn't going to happen with Giannis.
For sure. You wouldn't let it happen. But see, it's all up to Dame here.
But
now even more than ever, but it's all up to Dame.
And again,
it's got to be a Dame series to get you past the first round.
And I was about to say,
no ifs, ands, or buts about it, even with Giannis.
And what I was about to say is that's not a bad thing.
No,
because if it was last year, without Giannis, we just don't have an answer to get out of the first round because Giannis ain't here. Drew ain't cutting it. Middleton ain't cutting it. Nobody is cutting it without Giannis. This year, you actually got some hope because you do have Dame, who's a very seasoned playoff vet, who knows how to control and be behind the controls and be the number one guy and win you a playoff series. That was the hope that they didn't have a season ago. If Giannis goes out and when Giannis goes out hurt. You actually got that hope this time around. He's still got to go out and do it. The task might be a little bit tall, but if he does it, are we surprised?
The task got about 4 to 6 inches taller than Dame. Because Halliburton is a problem.
He's a problem. He's been a problem.
Dame is going to have fits with him.
He's been a problem. But I think Dame is – what I said when Dame came to – the Bucks this year is that I think, and I don't think we've gotten to see it yet, but I think it's been because of all the drama surrounding the Bucks more so. But I thought when Dame came to Milwaukee, people would get a better appreciation for how good of a point guard Dame actually is and not how good of a scorer / shooter Dame is.
I don't think people have gotten that.
I don't think people have gotten that, and I think this is his time to show it.
Sure. But this, I think through the regular season, he hasn't shown anything that anybody hadn't been able to see two times a year for his entire tenure at Portland.
But again,
outside of the state.
But again, it's the regular season. You're getting acclimated to a new team. And this is a case where you don't have Giannis. So the role that you've had to adjust to, you get to adjust back to sort of your natural role in what you've been in Portland, because Giannis is not going to be available, at least for the earlier part of the series. So now Dame gets to turn back into Dame Dollar because he don't have a choice because Giannis is hurt. So with Giannis not being available, what I'm saying is this is a great opportunity for Dame to not only show y'all how great of a point guard he actually is that y'all might not have gotten from the 20-plus or however many nationally televised games that he played this year and compared to the two that he would get when he was in Portland, but for us here in Portland, we should know that this dude can take over this series and beat you, Indiana. You're not safe. And you ain't the Warriors, okay? Yeah. You're not safe, and you're not the Warriors, nor are you that Pelicans team that one year with AD and Drew Holiday. It shit happened. He got to the playoffs 8 times. You're going to get a series like that every once in a while out of 8 consecutive playoff appearances. But the team that really had their number, which is why you saw Clay and CJ jawing at each other the other night, has been the Warriors over that tenure, arguably the greatest team that the game has ever seen. But other than that, we've seen Dame do it to Paul George and Russell Westbrook. We've seen Dame do it to the Houston Rockets. We got countless memories of Dame taking over a series and getting Portland to the next round. I think he's still capable of doing that right now. This is the perfect opportunity for him to show it. The perfect one.
Well, I mean, I hope he does, because I want him
to get a ring. And I believe he can and will.
Yeah. All right. Well, I would still call that the biggest potential for an upset. I mean, I guess unless you count Dallas Clippers, but I don't really count that. That's too close.
That's a battle, is what that is.
That's no. Whoever wins that, there's no underdog in that one. That's
gonna war.
That's gonna be so much fun. I can't wait for that. The play-in games tonight, as we're recording on a Wednesday, I'm not even necessarily too interested in, to be honest.
Well, you got to be interested, I think, in the game that's currently being played, which is the Miami Heat and the Philadelphia 76ers, because of the Miami Heat. And that, we had the conversation again last week about dangerous teams. I have no choice but to call Miami's dangerous, because I know they have another gear when it comes to this postseason. And right now they're currently up 10 in the second quarter against Embiid and the 76ers. And I definitely think Miami could beat the number 2 New York Knicks, because that's who Miami would face as the 7th seed if they end up finishing this game out on top. They would be the 7th seed, and then the Sixers would have to play the winner of the Hawks and the Bulls for that 8th seed on Friday. So it's like, with Miami, I'm keeping my eyes on this game, because I'm like, oh, Miami's probably going to get at least to the second round again, because a New York Knicks team with no Julius Randle having to play against them Heat boys over there.
It's vulnerable. You're vulnerable.
You're vulnerable.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler having to guard Jalen Brunson. That's probably one of the least favorable matchups that you'll have as an offensive stud, which Jalen Brunson is. Like, you're going to have to deal with Jimmy Butler all over you for 7 games. Hey, that's not a light task.
Yeah, you're not going to put up 40. I can promise you that.
It's not a light task.
It's not going to be 40, dude. So, it could be 39 and a half, but it ain't going to be 40.
It ain't going to be 40.
Because he's going to be on you. And it's going to happen. Yeah, well, I mean, that's going to be great. I don't want to see that, to be honest, just because I really want to see Joel Embiid in a peak, you know, deep – in peak condition deep in the playoffs, because we haven't ever seen that with him. And I think that this Philadelphia team still has it in them. Now,
is he that even right now? Because he just came back from injury.
I know.
Considering that, he still probably ain't going to be peak healthy Joel Embiid.
For sure.
He's just got back in time where he's good enough to play, and you got to go for it because it's the postseason.
Well, you win this game and you get that extra whatever day or whatever of rest.
That helps.
But
he's got to get past Miami.
And if you lose and then you win against the winner of the Hawks and Bulls, which I got the Hawks, I think that, your consolation prize is you have to play Boston now? Like,
you ain't winning that series.
No, you're going to lose that, so, no matter who it is.
You
so,
ain't winning that series.
So you definitely need to win tonight. Philly, I'm pulling for you, dog, because I called the Miami Heat not dangerous, and I should have taken it back as soon as I said it, because we've seen this movie for like 3 years in a row now.
You did call them not dangerous.
I did. I did say that on wax, dude. I did.
Well, that's what we got for the NBA. We'll have more for you next week when we're actually in the playoffs and this play-in shit is over with, which I ain't complaining about the play-in. I've enjoyed the play-in since it's existed.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's been great for the league overall, so no complaints here. But there is some complaints for some new women's basketball fans. Again, this will all be a reckoning. This moment in history with so many new eyes on women's basketball, it will be a continuous reckoning, especially if you're following none other than the Caitlin Clark. And the reason I say that is because it's a lot of y'all out there that just realize that over 4 years, Caitlin Clark is only going to make $338,000. And y'all feel some type of way because y'all ain't know that they ain't making bread like that in the WNBA when it comes to just their WNBA contracts alone. So now you got all of these people in an uproar trying to compare wage gaps between the WNBA and the NBA. And a lot of y'all were just clearly unaware that Caitlin Clark was only going to make a little bit over $300,000 over the next 4 years. Y'all feel like she's worth far more than that, especially now that you not only have the NBA numbers to compare that to, but you have Caitlin Clark's NIL valuation to compare that to. Here we are. The folks that didn't know, they now know that they got to make a little bit more money in the W.
Well, it's like, dude, first off, you guys just got here. Dude, just go sit over there. I'll explain it to you. First off.
That's what you're here for.
First off.
Please explain.
First off, if it makes you feel any better, they do get to keep a larger percentage of that money than, say, the men, because that tax bracket is a little bit more forgiving. So if that's what you need. But, yeah, of course, they don't make a lot. We've been talking about this for a very long time, okay? And that's that kind of like the whole point. Now, we appreciate you guys chiming in, but don't like, you know what I mean? Don't blow the spot up here. Like, just relax. Caitlin Clark she's like the LeBron James of the WNBA. And what do I mean when I say that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean that she's going to change the entire perception of the media scape of the WNBA to women's basketball. It's going to permeate.
I think she's already done it.
I mean, she already has.
And it'll continue
but
to happen.
But now, because what 2.3 million is the number for this week. That was the, or 2.5
million. For the draft
was
viewers.
The average viewership for that. That is 2.5 times what it's been year to year for the past 15 years, 10
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
So.
And the most ever.
So, and the most ever by a huge margin. But, so all of that's going to be here. But what we need you to do that just got here, watch the games, dog. Watch the games and keep tapping in and go back to the college, you know, to the NCAA all the way down to D3. Guess what? You're going to find me and P standing
That's
there
right.
too, because we're
That's
always
right.
standing at every level.
Been there.
And it's like, just do that. Go pull up to you have a school, a D1 school or a D3 school or whatever. Pull up to that. Like, you have to just continue to support and not be like, oh, what? They're making 38. Hey, that's not right. Anyway, back to your phone. Like, get in with it.
Go purchase some.
Go buy one of them sweet-ass orange hoodies.
Yeah.
You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, yeah. Go buy a jersey. But, go buy tickets to the games.
but God forbid, man, don't pity these women. Because the thing that irks me the most, man, is that the people who look at sport, and you talked about this earlier, and they just sort of denigrate sport and its meaning to people and to the entire human condition. These athletes have been dreaming about playing professionally for their entire life, especially this new crop. The WNBA has been there their entire life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they know what it is. You know what I mean? They don't need you going on Twitter being like, hey, that's unfair. Like, yeah, of course. It's hard work and it's sacrifice. And Caitlin Clark and other you know, big names that have entered into this draft were all lottery picks. It was a massive draft. It was crazy the way it shook out.
Yeah, it was.
To be honest, because for the game, but man, it's because of the game. It's because of the skill of the players that have gotten them to the point where now people are actually watching the draft and now people are paying attention to how much money they make. And you want to see those dividends pay off, because I know that one thing is for sure, that it's going to pay off on the court as it has been the whole time. It's going to pay off on the court. Just watch the games.
Yeah, continue to amplify the product. And by doing that, that means you're likely spending money with the product. And that's what these players need you to do. They need you to put your money where your mouth is.
There you go.
They don't need you to just talk about the disparity that you just learned about that they've already well known about. They ain't that slow.
This is the most of them have made in the history of the game coming. You know, Caitlin Clark, like, that's one of the biggest rookie contracts you'll have ever seen in the history of the league.
For sure. So it's like, put your money where your mouth is. Start there. You could speak on it. I don't mind the fact that y'all are here now and y'all are being made aware of this. I just hope that you learn from it that you might need to dig in your pockets. Hey, last year, my way of contributing is I get the league pass. I get WNBA league pass every year. I don't have a WNBA team in my market, so the other ways in which I would like to support, I just can't.
We'll see you this year, Seattle. We're gonna have to
you know what I'm saying? Like, the other ways that I would like to support, I just can't right now. So what I do is I go get league pass.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I lock in. I get league pass every year to where I can watch a plentiful amount of games. And this year, you're about to see a bunch of much more nationally televised games because Caitlin Clark is here. Go tune into them. Go run up those networks. Go run up those ratings. Continue to show up. Continue to put your when I say put your money where your mouth is, I'm also saying put your time where your mouth is. And guess what? Time is money. So it's all the same. Please prioritize doing that first rather than just coming here and complaining about something that we all already knew. And again, I'm not mad that you're bringing light to that, because we do want to make these WNBA players, we do want to see them make more money. My problem is I don't like y'all coming over here and comparing it to the NBA, because that's an easy argument to lose. The argument to win is the guaranteed one. The more money they make based on whatever it is that we're putting into this thing, that we're investing into this thing, the more money these WNBA players will ultimately be able to make over time as the league continues to expand. You know, the contracts, TV deals, broadcast deals are going to start being restructured. All of that is not far away. It's happening right now in real time. So right now is the time to really invest and support it and not even look at what's going on in the NBA and comparing it to what's going on in the NBA. Just keep watering this seed right here that is the WNBA that we see clearly has the potential to be very, very fruitful.
Well, I mean, I'm usually not this guy on the podcast, but like it really does feel like what I'm saying, like it really does feel like it's just another way to undercut the value of the sport for women. In that, like, you know, that Pat Bev, I forget what podcast it was, but they asked him some rapid fire questions and they're like, how many people in the NBA are like, they like love the game that, you know, and he said 50%. And I'm like, it's probably even lower than that, man, because these dudes know that it's a paycheck on the other end.
For sure.
So it becomes something different to be like, I'm going to invest my entire life into this. And I know that there's not a paycheck at the end of it, no matter what I do.
Dude, yeah.
And then on top of that, now you become, because the biggest thing about being like in this world, like a human in the Western world today, is that you've had to commodify all of your passions and you have to open up all of these like multiple streams of income
for sure
in order to have like a fine, sustainable life or what you think you should have,
right?
Particularly based on being an American, which is stupid, but
yeah, but
they also go overseas and risk going to prison overseas and busting their ass, not getting paid. I mean, getting paid some money over there, but it's not enough. It's not even as much as the dudes that go to China and play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's just so much more effort and so much more like passion and like care for the sport on that side.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm not getting paid here, but yeah, I'm still going to go out there and drop 35 tonight for no good reason at all other than I'm just a hooping ass.
I love this shit.
And I love this shit.
Yeah, and I want to be the best.
And it's been the best. And we told you, because it's been the best basketball all year.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has.
We told you.
Better than the NBA. And when we say that, no, we're not talking about talent level. But when we talk about entertainment, it's been the best basketball that we've had.
Yeah.
It's been better than everything. Better, like, women's basketball has been more entertaining than everything. Kudos to them. Kudos to him. So yeah, man, put your money where your mouth is and go support him, man. We don't need to talk about how much player the NBA, how much money the NBA players are making. Let's just keep watering these plants over here that is the WNBA, because clearly it's some fruit ready to grow from that thing. And we're seeing it as these numbers continue to increase throughout the reckoning that we've been in the last couple of years when it comes to women's basketball at both the collegiate and the pro levels. And hey, for those of y'all that are looking for a rivalry at the next level and are skeptical that the Caitlin Clark Angel Reese rivalry won't be what it is at the WNBA level, don't even worry about
don't trip
that.
On that, big dog.
You got the two best bigs in the game. You got Asia Wilson of the Las Vegas Aces. You got Breanna Stewart of the New York Liberty, two of the best players to have ever played in the game in your life. And if the only reason you're here is because you see color, one's black and one's white. Damn it.
To help you. If
that's why you're here, it's because Caitlin was white and Angel Reese was black. Well, guess what? Breanna's white and Asia Wilson is black, and they the best two players in the game.
Yeah, you can check that out.
Check it out. If that's all you're here for, you're not here for the basketball. You're here because you want to create a reckoning amongst the two best players, and one happens to be black and one happens to be white. You got an opportunity to do that with Breanna Stewart and Asia Wilson, damn it. And they're the two best. They just played in the championship against each other last year. It's a good chance to play in the championship again against each other this year. If that's why you're here, there's your option.
Yo, and you know what's sick?
I know it might sound a little crazy for me to say, but to those of you, there's your option. Those of you that are here for the Magic and Bird feeling, there's your option.
I like what Vegas did, too. They picked up Fair.
Yeah.
And after they grabbed Kate Martin. I'm like, I see what you – that's very – dude, and by the way, also – Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese are in the same conference, so they're going to be playing each other all the time.
For sure, and they love each other.
And it's going to be sick.
Just like y'all tried to make them out to not love each other.
Chicago did their thing.
Yeah, Chicago won.
Chicago
did what the Sparks had the chance to do.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah,
Chicago
yeah.
did what the Sparks had the chance
but
to
I
do.
I told you, Rekia is too nice. You had to go get her.
And that's why I'm not, like, critical of the Sparks.
Yeah.
But the Sparks passed up on that option of being able to get two bigs high in the draft.
Sure.
They obviously had the second pick. They went after Cameron Brink. They had the fourth pick as well. So Cardoso goes third. Well, they still could have went and got Angel Reese. But they decided to go get Rekia Jackson, which for all intents and purposes, I'm not mad at that. But what does Chicago do? Trade up a spot so they can go secure Angel Reese at the seventh pick after they'd already gotten Cardoso at the three pick. And now, quite frankly, they have an identity. You know what I'm saying? You start Cardoso as your first big. You bring Reese off the bench, and you create an identity on the interior, and you can build around that.
Yeah.
The Sparks had the opportunity to do that with Brink and or Reese or Cardoso. Again, likely would have been Reese because Cardoso did end up going third, and a lot of draft boards had Rekia going third initially, but I do believe the tournament run Cardoso went on improved her draft stock, where instead of going around like four or five, she ended up going three.
Chicago is, and it was their position in the draft, but you know, you talked about identity. The Sparks have an identity too, and their identity is a pedigree of forwards that can hoop at all three and score at all three levels. And I really believe that Rekia Jackson is going to be like the best prospect, the best player when it's all said and done in that draft, because she is so good. And when you look at the LA Sparks, that's what they do. They got the Lisa Leslies, the Candace Parkers, the Nneka Ogwumikes, and now I believe Rekia Jackson is gonna be that for them, because she's a star. She can, like I said, score at all three levels. And when you have Cameron Brink behind you, you can afford to defend too. She's so athletic and defend. Now, when you look at Chicago, I think, and we talked about this weeks ago, that I think you actually was really the one that illuminated it. Camila Cardosa is the more ready-made WNBA player today.
And so going
and getting her and then putting Angel Reese on the back burner like that for Chicago, that's setting yourself up for success for 5+ years down the road.
For sure.
Having flexibility. So what they did was to me the best. I like Seattle's pickups too. I'm still not sleeping on Seattle. A lot of big movement going on, but to me, man, Seattle feels like
they lost Breanna Stewart. You know, they lost, you know, Sue Bird. Like they lost some stuff, you know, just kind of by default. But yeah, I think Seattle is ready to get back into the conversation of being one of the best teams in the WNBA. So I'm excited about the W. Lastly, before we get out of here, Spencer, I think the fellas heard us last week, man.
Oh, yeah.
It was a whole lot of rapping and competing happening between last week's episode when we came up here and were highly disappointed in our fellow men and what they were doing in the rap game, to right now, a lot has happened since then. Dropping Get Me 50, Drake out here dissing everybody, Rick Ross out here dissing Drake. And then what I like even more is you even got the middle class rappers competing amongst each other right now.
Class.
You know what I'm saying?
All like, rich guys.
You know what I'm saying? You got the middle class rappers. I'm only speaking in rap terms.
That's funny,
you know what I'm saying?
Bro.
You got shout out to Simba, friend of the show, middle cousin. Class. He out here rapping circles around y'all. You got Kaz out here getting back at Simba. There's more that I hear is coming down the pike based on my inside sources that I just can't reveal right here, right now, but the competition and the competitiveness, it's going to continue, and there's more to come, and I love it. I'm much happier about the state of hip-hop today than I was a week ago.
Yeah, and I like that it's not posturing. I mean, you just mentioned Simba, but DaBaby, you showed me that DaBaby LA Leakers freestyle.
Yeah.
He just came out and just threw the gauntlet down at anybody looking weird his way for no reason at all.
And I love
mean, the
that.
Reason is he needs to get back into it, because he is a really elite level rapper.
He's
bro.
An elite, and I love
he's
that.
Good, man.
And I love that he shows that, because again, everybody, you know, we've talked about this time and again when it comes to the music business, and DaBaby even kind of alluded to it in that freestyle where he's like, pre-2020, he was getting 300,000 a feature. But now he probably getting like 150 a verse, right? And we know that he's been through a lot since 2020. He's dealt with some personal stuff that has kind of affected and impacted that, where pre-pandemic, basically, he was an industry darling, and he had this formula that continued to work over and over and over. And then he started to get this sort of stigma and stereotype that he good, but all his music sound the same. He makes the same song over and over and over again because it was just working. He had a sound that worked, and the label and the industry, they beat it into the ground. Where I actually think now, as a part of this sort of rebrand, if you will, and as he's trying to make his way back up to the top, I always thought DaBaby was a great rapper. In fact, obviously, two guys that would often get compared as like the best young up-and-coming hottest artists in the game were DaBaby and Lil Baby. And a lot more people leaned on the side of Lil Baby because I think he didn't deal with as many personal issues and was able to kind of stay at the top. And so he started getting, you know, more of the acclaim that he was the best young rapper in the game. But for me personally, I always felt like DaBaby could rap circles around him. But because DaBaby kind of fell off because he got in some trouble, all the acclaim went to Lil Baby. But I still think, and I think that LA Leakers showed, DaBaby can spit with the best of them. And I talk about a fire flame spitter like Simba. And let me just say, there's some unreleased stuff that I've heard as well. That, yeah, DaBaby got it. And so does Simple. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've heard some stuff as well that I know that both of them dudes, they can rap. They can rap.
It's so, definitely not a coincidence that they both dropped those freestyles back-to-back days.
Those dudes can rap. And they both know it about each other. Yeah. And the respect is there in that regard. And so I love to see it, man. I love to see that, you know, we were able to kind of quickly, because I think the only way we would have been able to quickly put away or at least put on the back burner that huge moment of J. Cole apologizing was for guys to get out there and rap and compete to sort of shift our focus from that. Or we would have been kind of dwelling in that because J. Cole is that big of a figure that made that big of a move and created that big of a moment. But in my opinion, for the worst when it comes to the game. But all of these guys coming out and rapping and putting verses out there and freestyles and whole songs, if you will. Like, I love that because I think the focus should always be on that.
Yeah, just keep rapping. Yeah, you got to keep
spitting. Don't stop rapping.
You just got to keep spitting. I think I might spit, bro. Who knows? It's funny. People have been talking to me about that. You know, a couple of people have been talking about that intermission, bro. They hit me.
Yeah.
Because you know, Fools has it on their page. People are like, oh, hey, that's cool. I saw you. Blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, well, it's going to happen first Saturday of every month.
That's
so
right.
And are you still doing those, what's it called, Thursdays?
Mimosa? Yeah, that's every Thursday.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up.
We missed you last week. We had a great wine education happening.
And, oh, shit, really?
Yeah, it was cool. We had a good time last Thursday. We had like a wine 101 education.
I'm not able to make it this Thursday. I got something going, but I'll come back. I'll start doing that again next week.
Come on. Because before you know it, it's going to be the first Saturday again.
A whole new set. I got some tunes cooking up.
That's our playground where we can get it off. We can practice and rehearse. Well, you got anything else, man?
That's it, man. I'm good.
Likewise. On that note, happy 250. We are going to leave y'all the only way that we know how, and that is to stay woke and go win.